88% of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
This is The Catholic Current with Father Robert Matteig.
I suppose it has always been the case that news, just by definition, if you're covering story A, you're not covering story B. If you've got your camera focused on this frame, the camera isn't focused outside of the frame. There has to be selection. That's inevitable. What concerns me is the principle for selection.
All news is truth filtered through the spirit of the age and whatever ends they see.
Praise be Jesus Christ. This is Father Robert Matteig of the Society of Jesus, your daily host for the Catholic Current, where we bring Christ to the world and the world to Christ. You're listening to us from the Station of the Cross Studios, your local radio station, and the iCatholic Radio mobile app, where we proclaim the fullness of truth with clarity and charity. As always, let's start with prayer. Name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Almighty God, through the intercession of St. Ignatius Loyola, we ask that you pour forth your Holy Spirit upon us, a spirit of discernment, that you might hear your voice and obey your command. In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Hey friends, did you know iCatholic Mobile is the only American Catholic mobile phone company? iCatholic Mobile offers unlimited 5G data, text, and talk, and iCatholic Mobile gives a portion of every dollar to the Station of the Cross Catholic Radio Network. By subscribing to iCatholic Mobile, you help fund programs that defend our Catholic faith. Join today at iCatholicMobile.com. Well, friends, we have come out of another political season, another presidential and congressional election cycle. Some people are very happy. Some people are unhappy. The happy people are doing a victory lap. Some people think they can go back to business as usual and put their feet up. Is that the best choice? My returning guest, a listener favorite, I think would answer no. She is known as the Crusader Gal. She is an author and a YouTuber and a great friend of the show. Sarah Kane, welcome back to The Catholic Current.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's always a pleasure, Father.
Sarah, we know, you know, William Butler Yeats had said that being Irish, that he could rely on his melancholy to sustain him during brief periods of joy. You recently wrote a column called Hope But Not Complacency. I know that at least some of you is Irish. Is your Irish showing in that essay?
Well, perhaps my Catholic desire to speak the truth is. I'll say that much.
Fair enough.
I think that what we have right now, like, yes, there are a lot of people who are cheering. And I think that there really is some cause for that. When you look at what could have been a Kamala Harris presidency, like, that's objectively speaking a terrible outcome. It's a terrible outcome, especially for the unborn, but it's a terrible outcome for everyone from an economic perspective, from a perspective in terms of what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in Ukraine. I mean, there are just so many different areas there where I think it would have been a negative outcome. That said, I do think that when we look upon the election, what we see is really disturbing from a cultural perspective. So I don't think it's indicative of a positive trajectory long term. I don't think you could have had a Democrat candidate 50 years ago who ran on a primary policy of abortion and had a chance at election. You know, the fact that we have that now ought to disturb us all, that the entire momentum behind her candidacy was about this grave evil act, you know, and also in addition to being grave and evil, it's an act that just ultimately puts the self as the god of the age. And I think that that has its own consequences as well that we're going to see going forward.
Well, you know, I do remember back in the day, I used to be a young man. And when I was a young man, the you snicker, but it's true. I've got pictures. The Clintons used to talk about abortion being safe, legal, and rare. Never said why rare. And in the 70s and in the 60s, we were told that abortion would only be for the rarest, most exceptional, tragic cases. and only for that, and absolutely nothing else, cross my heart and hope to die. That was, I've heard those things, I've read those things for decades. And now the candidacy of Kamala Harris was based on a galloping enthusiasm for abortion. And the fact that anyone who is sentient could countenance such a candidacy gives me pause to say there is a lot of work that needs to be done in our culture, in our polity, in our churches before we can breathe easy. Friends, we're having an after-election conversation about what's taking place in our culture, in our church, and in our nation. My returning guest is listener favorite author Sarah Kane. Sarah, what is the hope? I agree with you. Complacency is always dangerous. You snooze, you lose, you blink, you die in the dark. But what is the basis of the what are we hoping for in our new situation?
I think that what the presidency going forward, his second term, will do for us primarily is give us time. So, like, yes, I think he'll have some political victories here and there. I'm not as optimistic as some people are about those, but I think that predominantly what we can say is that it gives us time. It slows some of the descent coming from on high, from the top, in terms of our country's political structure. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't fight the culture war for us. It gives us time to do that on the ground. Because ultimately, it was Andrew Breitbart who was talking about how politics is downstream from culture. And that's very evident, I think, in our society today. And what we need to do is to take back some of that culture and to, frankly, normalize some things that people have given up, some fights that they have given up. So when we have this time, we should be actually taking on the abortion topic in part, because, again, I think the way that the Trump camp, I suppose, handled it was kind of awful. Like, I think they could have done a much better job. Mm-hmm. And if you're gonna run with the pro-life effort, there's a moral argument there to be made, and a strong one. I think they often acted like they were on the defense, and we right. really can't do that, and we shouldn't do that, because it's like you're either on the side of human life that is alive and is valuable and is human, or you're not. And if you are, then that's something that's worth stating and frankly just worth dying for and worth putting everything behind. So we shouldn't act like that's something to hide or be ashamed of. Instead, I think we should be pushing back on that and being aggressive, in the sense that the other side, those who are fighting in favor of that, need to answer for why they don't think these human beings are human beings, why they don't think these are people. Because really, they're the ones who should be on the defensive on that particular issue. But this goes across the board. Like, things like gay marriage, Republicans have abandoned the issue entirely. Basically decided that they're not going to defend what marriage is. Well, that has consequences throughout the culture in terms of what do we think a family is?
Right.
Well, if we can't define marriage, how do we define a family? And if you can define a family, upon what base structure are we building the rest of our society? And so that's why these fundamental questions matter and why they shouldn't be abandoned. And they have been abandoned at the political level. So we need to fix them at the cultural level, to get these things back into the collective conversation so that they can be fought downstream once again. Because right now, these things are, like, basically losing issues politically, which is terrifying. Right. And so we need to fix that by changing what people are willing to say and able to say, and strengthening these arguments, because this is the side of actual truth and decency, and we shouldn't act like that's something shameful.
See, I'm relieved that the high government official who was wearing a dress while admitting he was a man is no longer with the government. And then the man wearing the dress insisting that he's a woman is very soon not going to be in the government and not responsible for the health care of citizens with comments about children. So I'm truly glad for all of those things. And I know that there are people who wince at the idea of being a culture warrior, because somehow that gets in the way of, you know, the real work of policy. We got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Let's start the conversation of why the culture war in some ways has to come first.
Well, certainly. I mean, the things that politicians can say and do depends upon, at least in this type of government, it depends upon their electorate, the people who are actually putting them in place to begin with, the people who are voting for them. It it changes based upon what the rules of acceptability are. Like, that's the way that our system of government is set up. It's not a top-down system. Therefore, if you want to change what's happening at the political level, you should realize that that is always going to be reflective of what's going on in your local community, what's going on in the cities, what's going on in public school systems, what's being accepted, what's being pushed back upon, so that these people in positions of power know what it is that they're going to face pressure for and what they're going to be comfortable doing, what's easy for them to do. All of these questions get answered far before they're actually elected. But, right. You know, what matters to them, what they're able to say, all of these things take place before they ever get there. You know, they have their different groups and they have polls and, you know, they have people who are tasked with finding out what it is okay to say. And honestly, that doesn't start up there. That starts amongst us. And that's what we have to fight to change.
Right. I think that we have to reclaim our voice, and we have to be able to say what we know to be true without apology. And that is so very different from the tedious nonsense of, I have to speak my truth. I am not interested in anybody's personal truth. I can't think of anything more tiresome and more jejune than that. But we do have to speak the truths that apply to us all, that bind us all, and that liberate us all. And sometimes that could lead to awkward conversation, which will bring us to our topic for our next segment. Friends, we come back and continue our conversation with a listener favorite, author Sarah Kane, also known as the Crusader Gal. Remember, a rallying cry here at the Catholic Current is Christus Mundum, Mundus Christo, bringing Christ to the world and the world to Christ. We do it because our Lord says so, for the greater glory of God, the love of our neighbor, and the salvation of our own soul. After the broadcast today, go to thestationofthecross.com, get our resources list, download our audio as podcast. Take us to your family and friends. Together, we'll take it to the whole world. We can do it with you. We cannot do it without you. Be back in just 2 minutes. Please do stay with us.
Looking for a mobile provider that aligns with your faith? Look no further than iCatholic Mobile, America's only Catholic 5G wireless provider. Enjoy the highest quality and fastest data with unlimited talk and text. Ideal for families and individuals, our affordable plan support causes you believe in, and a portion of every dollar goes to the Station of the Cross. With dependable nationwide coverage, you can have peace of mind knowing your choice promotes traditional Catholic values. Switch today. Visit iCatholicMobile.com.
You're listening to The Catholic Current with Father Robert McTague from the Station of the Cross Catholic Media Network. Stay connected with the show and our guests and topics by following the show on Twitter and Gab. Just search for The Catholic Current.
Praise be Jesus Christ. This is Father Robert McTague of the Society of Jesus, your daily host for the Catholic Current, where we bring Christ to the world and the world to Christ. You're listening to us from the Station of the Cross Studios, your local radio station, the iCatholic Radio mobile app, where we proclaim the fullness of truth with clarity and charity. In the aftermath of the election, which made some people very happy, we're talking about hope but not complacency. My returning guest is the listener favorite, author Sarah Kane, also known as the Crusader Gal. Sarah, at the end of the last segment, we were talking about culture and politics, and that can lead to, candidly, difficult conversations at the best of times. Holiday seasons are coming up here in the United States, Thanksgiving and then Christmas. There's already some discussion of how to have those conversations, how to avoid those conversations, or why you shouldn't show up at all if members of your family haven't voted the right way. And you wrote an article with a provocative title called Divided Tables. Tell us about that, please.
Certainly. I mean, it was Whoopi Goldberg, who I think was most recently on TV telling people not to attend Thanksgiving with people who had voted for President Trump. But I think that it does serve as a bit of a springboard. We've had announcements by celebrities on this topic for what seems like the last couple of years, or every couple of years for the last decade at least. And I think the trouble here is that it's not so much just politics in the way that it used to be. What I mean by that is it's not that we're all aiming in the same direction and we just have some sense of, like, how do we get there? And I think that used to be the sort of American consensus. We all just wanted the American dream. We just wanted to get married and have kids and have some degree of economic comfort, and certainly to be able to do better for the next generation, to leave an inheritance behind for them. And it was just how do we achieve this in the best possible way? How do we help people who are less fortunate to get there? How do we increase wealth mobility? And these questions. And so you had some people who wanted, like, an increase in the welfare state, and some people who wanted to use private charity to achieve that, you know. But overall, like, those two points, they converge. It's just let's help, you know, people who are in bad situations in the case of that. But what we're talking about now is just entirely different. Because when you have one group of people who are instead talking about mutilating children, you know, those that survive the fact that they want to also promote abortion without limit, it's kind of difficult to kind of bridge that gap, I think. And that's really the issue, is that we have reached a point, I think, of cultural divergence, not so much merely political divergence. I think that's the distinction that I'd like to make. And it's not, I don't fully disagree with Whoopi. I mean, obviously I'm coming at it from a very different angle here, but I don't think I could sit there comfortably and have a relaxed, comfortable meal with somebody who was opposed to the Born Alive Protection Act, which guarantees health care for babies who survived their own abortions. That would be really difficult for me to not say anything in that kind of instance. And I think at least an argument could be made that it would be morally problematic for me not to.
Right. You see, I think we're the Overton window has shifted somewhat. You know, I think that there are topics about which honorable people may disagree. I remember living in community once, and one of the brethren had a T-shirt that said, "Don't start with me. You know how I get." And I think that was a very apt warning label for him, if you knew him, and I respect that. And certainly, you know, you can sit down and enjoy a meal with someone who is following the economics of Keynes rather than Milton Friedman. For example, you could have a decent meal with someone who thinks that maybe the marginal tax rate should be X percent rather than X percent plus 7. That's okay. But hey, you know, if a child has the temerity to survive his own abortion, should we just break his neck or just, you know, leave him to die exposed on a steel table? That's different. That's different. And I think that our culture has become so coarsened and so corrupt and also so adept at euphemism that we've lost the ability to make some really important distinctions. And that's something where I want to dwell the next in the conversation is, what have we lost such that when we do need to have those conversations, when it is appropriate to have those awkward conversations, we don't know what to do anymore.
Right.
I've been yelled at that I can't have an opinion on abortion because I'm not a woman. This is back in the olden days, before your time, young lady, when people still knew what a woman was. But back in those days, you know, and so I think we've lost the possibility very often for moral discourse. What went wrong? Where did we lose the thread?
Well, I kind of wonder to what degree we at least worsened it by having this sort of policy, which so many families had, and I think that was encouraged by entertainment, which was, let's just not discuss politics or religion around the dinner table. Like, let's just not have those conversations at all. And I think that actually became sort of a cultural norm that amongst families, we just wouldn't discuss what happened to be the most important things to discuss. And that's at least got to be part of the problem right there. But further than that, I think that we've been raising children throughout the school system and throughout the university system, in which they are unable to have an actual debate or an argument, which is distinct from a quarrel, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're unable to engage in that because there is no actual space to allow for it. I mean, it's kind of ironic. You've got these universities that talk all about their different safe spaces, but really that they're not safe spaces for an alternative opposing view. And so because of that, what happens is these people live inside of an echo chamber. They never hear anybody else's argument. They never properly craft their own argument, their own retort to somebody else's point of view. They don't fully understand what it is that they believe or why. And so they're just kind of fueled upon their own rage and self and their own indignation. And that's not a way to proceed. And so what happens is these people, they get out into the regular world, and then suddenly somebody like Trump gets elected and they end up screaming at the moon. Like, that's not actually helpful in terms of society. And you have different sort of manifestations of that. Just after the most recent election, you know, Twitter, TikTok, all these different places are filled with people screaming and crying and yet completely unable to say exactly what it is that's wrong and what they think and why and really articulate their opinions. We're completely unable to do that because no discourse is even allowed. And if you happen to be someone who is Christian, heaven forbid, in that kind of university system or inside the school system, you're most likely just going to be afraid to say anything at all.
Right.
So it's not even so much that you're afraid of a contrary opinion. It's that you know that you're going to be penalized either socially or in terms of your grades, you know, that you're going to face repercussions for speaking the truth. And so you want to get to this university system, you want to get your degree and walk away and never actually have any of those conversations because you feel like in some sense your quality of life thereafter will depend upon it. And so if we built an entire culture based upon this concept of if I have this certain opinion, I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to deal with conflict. And if you're on the other side, it's you never actually, you know, hear from anybody else's opinion because theirs is hate speech. So why would you want to, you know, tolerate it at all? We're not going to be able to communicate with one another. And so by the time you get to the family, you know, table, which is becoming far less common to begin with, is, you know, an actual family is eating around a table is a different topic perhaps. It's no wonder that those people on both sides are just sort of freeze and don't want to deal with that anymore.
Well, again, at the risk of sounding like an old man, there was a time when not only did adults emotionally self-regulate, they could debate and engage in argument. It was a magic time, Sarah. I wish you could have been there. But
me too.
We were from a grander place. But what does it say about our educational institutions and our family life, and dare I say it, our churches, that we just, that seems to be mostly gone right now, and that whoever screams the loudest with the implicit threat of violence in the background, sometimes not very implicit, that's where we are now. If symptoms persist, where do we go from here? What's next?
Well, we've missed the entire point of the argument. And I think before we go on, we should focus on that, which is to come together in mutual search of the truth.
Right.
And because we've lost that, so anything that borders upon a debate or might look like a debate from the outside isn't. It's just one person's ego fighting against another for the sake of clicks or likes or cheers or applause. And that's not what it was supposed to be. It's supposed to be, let us come together. You know, you and I, we disagree. Let's find out who's right because we care enough about the truth. And why that distinction is important and why we're losing that is because this desire to know the truth was always supposed to be a desire to know God.
Right.
Right. And so at the source of that is an absolute spiritual crisis. We no longer care about the truth because we're no longer looking to know God and to be close to him. And so that's the disconnect. Is as we become a de-Christianized society, we're abandoning truth because we're abandoning him. And so the consequences of that are basically without end.
Right. And I think that we're at a point now where It's infantilizing. We are in a culture of tantrums and near occasion of tantrums. We don't know how to get beyond "says you" as a form of argumentation. And the primary good is not to hurt anybody's feelings. You know, I read with embarrassment that certain prominent universities who identify as Catholics, they recognized that their pre-election stress was so stressful for their students that they would have safe spaces with cookies and hot chocolate and Legos so that they could recover some near womb experience or some form of toddler life so that the adult world wouldn't intrude upon them. And I said, these people are at least 18 years old. They operate heavy machinery. They can vote. You know, they're old enough to fight in wars. And the thought of an election makes them retire to cookies and milk. That's not what civilization is based on. That's not the stuff that heroes are made of. And those are certainly not the types of Christians who would brave the lions in the arena rather than betray Christ. I think we've turned our younger generation into helpless people who need to be coddled by an overweening state. Almost make you think there was an intelligent design behind it all. Friends, we come back. We're going to continue our conversation with listener favorite author Sarah Cain, known as the Crusader Gal. After the broadcast today, go to thestationofthecross.com, get our resources list, download our audios, podcasts. Wherever you can find audio, you can find us. Follow us on your favorite platform, write a 5-star review. We need to attract the attention of the listeners so that these conversations get the attention that they deserve. Everything that you need to take us to your family and friends, we give to you. Together, let's take it around the world. We can do it with you. We cannot do it without you. Back in just 2 minutes. Please do stay with us. This is Jesuit Father Robert McTague, your daily host of the Catholic Current, and I'm asking for your help. Folks have been asking me to answer questions on the air, so I'm asking you to send questions to my mailbag. We can do this good work together. Send us your questions at thestationofthecross.com/askfather. That's thestationofthecross.com/askfather. I look forward to hearing from you.
This is the Catholic Current from the Station of the Cross Catholic Media Network. Catch up on an episode you've missed or share them with your family and friends. The Catholic Current is podcasted wherever you enjoy listening. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, TuneIn, and the iCatholic Radio mobile app.
Praise be Jesus Christ. This is Father Robert McTague of the Society of Jesus, your daily host for the Catholic Current, where we bring Christ to the world and the world to Christ. You're listening to us from the Station of the Cross Studios, your local radio station, and the iCatholic Radio mobile app, where we proclaim the fullness of truth with clarity and charity. On this timely Tuesday, I am speaking with a listener favorite author, Sarah Cain, also known as the Crusader Gal. You want to stay with us for the whole hour. Coming up next, you and me sharing timely thoughts, reflecting on what we've heard today. Sarah, I imagine somewhere out there in the listening audience is someone who's saying, oh, Sarah, you British royal subject, you. Even though it's true that no election can do all of what needs to be done, we have something that you lot don't have. Namely, we have the Constitution, which is the ultimate backstop against all depredations. Some would say in response that having absolute faith in the Constitution is like a victim of domestic violence saying, I can't be beaten anymore. I have a restraining order. What's your response to that?
Certainly. I mean, the Constitution, well, it certainly didn't help Alfonso Martinez, who stole an LGBT flag from a sacrilegious church and then burned it in a local parking lot. And for that, what would normally be considered a minor crime, he was sentenced to 16 years because it was a hate crime. So when we talk about what the Constitution is going to do, I think we should look at it in perspective of what it's currently doing. Because right. The thing is, the Constitution is only going to do as much as it is interpreted to mean, right? Or right. It's only going to do as much as we're willing to let it do, because ultimately it's paper. And that's the trouble, is that it's all up to the individuals to actually enforce or acknowledge this Constitution that was based upon an understanding of natural law that over time we are giving less and less credence to. Right? The best of America's founding documents all acknowledge a natural law understanding, and we don't have that anymore. They acknowledge God. They acknowledge that we get our rights from God, and that to be human is particularly, I don't know, better, I guess you could say, than being mere animal because of our relationship to him, because we're made in the image and likeness of God. You know, these are the things that were sort of integral to early American documents that nowadays we're walking away from. And as we walk away from it, you see just horrendous cases like the one that I just mentioned. You see things like the defense of abortion enshrined in law, which would have been just unthinkable to one of the American founders. And that's right. The thing. It's like when you look at what's actually being enforced now, I think there's already a very serious cause to say, well, the Constitution is not being acknowledged in an originalist way, which is to say in the way that it was meant when it was written. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's always going to be malleable from here, depending upon what the culture allows it to be redefined as.
Right. Well, I know there is a school of jurisprudence that says, well, you know, the Constitution is a living document. What mm-hmm. that really means, that's shorthand for, we're just going to make stuff up and call it constitutional.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the essence of the Massachusetts state constitution, for example, precedes the American Constitution. And oh my goodness, mirabile dictu, who knew it all along? Those Puritans really intended to countenance gay marriage all those centuries ago. We just didn't know it until now. Likewise, you know, the framers of the Constitution, who are at least natural law advocates and deists, and some of them were Christians and one of them was Catholic, I just don't think they could have said, well, yeah, obviously, what took the Supreme Court so long to discover a right to have, let's call it what it is, state-sanctioned sodomy.
Right.
So the idea that the piece of paper is going to protect me, the piece of paper doesn't mean anything if people are not committed to it. I mean, look what's taking place in Pennsylvania right now. There are election officials in Pennsylvania says, that's right. The Supreme Court said, don't count these ballots. We're going to count them anyway. The law says, don't count those ballots. We're going to count them anyway. What are you going to do about it? And the answer is, well, nothing. So yeah. What does the law mean at that point? I don't think this bodes well for our civilization. What are your thoughts on that?
I certainly don't think so either. And, you know, I still have so many people who will send me, they send me news articles, and don't get me wrong, I appreciate it, but I've received so many different links to the recent case. There was a British man, a veteran, and he was convicted of praying outside of an abortion clinic in England. He was silently praying, but his head was bowed, and the prosecution argued that his head being bowed was indicative of him not being supportive of abortion, and therefore his action was a criminal offense. Like, literally, a police officer walked up to him and said, what is the nature of your prayer? Like, that's the level of, I don't know, despotism, I suppose, mm-hmm. that's going on over there. And that's fine. People sent me those links, and I did cover it, of course. But what they also sent me was, this could never happen here. And that's where I say, no, actually, I think that's exactly the direction that we're going. Sure, not there yet, but, you know, it hasn't been long since what's her name, Bevelyn Williams, is going to go spend 3 years in prison for her activism outside of an abortion clinic in New York. Now, don't get me wrong, her actions were slightly different from, you know, the veteran in Britain, in that she was blocking an entrance to the abortion clinic, which normally speaking would be a misdemeanor. If anyone was blocking the entrance to private property, that normally that would be a misdemeanor. But we've got, you know, the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, known as the FACE Act, which then makes it a felony for anyone to do it for an abortion clinic. So it's entirely about the fact that this particular set of clinics is preferred. Like, it's seen that they're doing actually a better act than real healthcare, or they're doing a better act than any other private business. And so it requires special protection in the law, which also means that anybody, you know, like Bevelyn, who's been sentenced to 3 years in prison, is being sentenced for thought crimes. In other words, it's because of her opinions and the reason that she actually, you know, was blocking that particular entrance, right? Which is to save, you know, human life, or to attempt to save human life. And so what you do see is this parallel here of a system of laws that are coming into play that particularly penalize people on the basis of the reason that they're there, whether or not they have approved opinions, whether or not their opinions are Christian, candidly. And so we've emerged at this point where already you can have this this sense that to be Christian and to fight for life is something that is a felony in the United States. That would certainly take a regular misdemeanor charge up there. So I don't think it's fair for us to say that in 10 years we couldn't have something every bit as despotic as you have in England, because we're already so ignoring the state of America's founding documents.
Friends, we're speaking today with author Sarah Kane, also known as the Crusader Gal. Sarah, I know in Germany there was a case recently. A retiree had a police raid at dawn, and his crime was in social media. He referred to, I think, the Minister of Energy as stupid, or words to that effect. It wasn't, you know, so-called hate speech. It wasn't calling for his harm or his death or anything like that. Just called him stupid in a public forum. And armed police came through his front door while he was sleeping, you know, at dawn. And we say, well, that's Germany. They can't help themselves. You know, that's the caricature. But again, you know, this is Europe. This is the West. This was Christendom. This is an intellectual tradition that has access to moral law and to Christian revelation. It also seems to me, honestly, this is really lazy and sloppy policing. And we saw this in Britain. You know, you arrest that guy who on suspicion of prayer, but when you've got demonstrable physical evidence of grooming gangs raping little English girls in the council housing, but they're
you want to upset public relations.
Public relations, yes. You, mm-hmm. you know, because of those gentlemen from Western Asia, I think was the term they used. Newcomers, we would call them here. Then you might get hurt doing that. So, I mean, it would seem to me that this is really bringing out the worst in human nature, the inclination to bully in conjunction with the inclination to follow the path of least resistance. What kind of vigilance do we need to exercise to begin to push back against this?
Well, I think that we need to really recognize the fact that if you attempt to create a legal system without any recognition of the source of laws and why we believe certain laws to be just and unjust, when you attempt to separate them entirely and just, I guess, make your own choices on the basis of what we want to be in the current age, ignoring all other ages, and that's what we're sort of moving towards, a what's convenient kind of legal system. That's not going to work. You're just going to have people who suffer from injustices. And that's what we're sort of moving towards, is this entirely de-Christianized legal system, which is to say a legal system that isn't focused on what's actually just. And not to say there's ever been a perfect system, but at least we were reaching for something that was objectively good. And we can no longer say that. And I think that's the problem, is that when you have a sort of a society that's moving towards secularization in this area, you have it moving towards a sort of aimlessness and a groundlessness in its law. And the thing is, what people don't realize, I think, is that from the legal system, it actually has a sort of carry down effect, in that what a nation's laws are actually affect the populace. You think of it sort of more, I think, in the reverse, more commonly, that what is culturally acceptable becomes enshrined in law. And that's to some degree true too as well. But what it is that we have in our laws, what we deem to be acceptable, affects the culture. And you've seen that. If you even go back to like the days of Rome, you have Justinian, and he's talking about that specifically, like what it is that we accept as a nation reflects us and who we are and who our children think that we are and what it is that we worship as the highest good. And it's like these are the questions that we can't answer and we don't even face anymore.
Right. I think that We have a culture where, who was it? Neil Hausman said, we're amusing ourselves to death, that we want to be just passively entertained. We want to be left alone. We don't want to commit to the truth. We don't want to fight for the truth. And we certainly don't want God to make any claims on us, because God is a buzzkill on this view. He gets in the way of what we want to do because we're pursuing that illusion of sex without consequence. And there goes that sixth commandment, and those human bodies with intelligent designs from God are getting in the way of all of that. God is going to gum up the works. So if we take out all of the guardrails that are divinely constituted, then we'll have a full field of play. And that's an illusion as well. Because if we take away the guardrails, here come the cliffs, and here come the predators, and here come the pushers and the seducers. And we've raised people to not know how to fight for themselves, not to know how to fight for the true, the good, and the beautiful. And, you know, as the barbarians are rampaging through the fields, we're showing up with patchouli and saying, who wants some dialogue? And I think that's going to end in a disaster. And on that resounding note, I will get off my soapbox and say, Sarah Kane, the Crusader Gal, thank you for another fascinating conversation. And I do look forward to next time.
As do I. Thank you so much, Father.
I'm Jesuit Father Robert McTague, your host to Every Day at the Catholic Current. It's a timely Tuesday, so I'm going to ask you to stay with us for the rest of the hour. Coming up next, timely thoughts, you and me reflecting on what you've heard today. Believe me, I have a lot to say about it. I wonder if 10 minutes is going to be enough. Be part of the conversation. Follow what we're following by following us on Gab. That's GAB.com. The channel is the Catholic Current, and you can influence the conversation. You can contact us at the Station of the cross.com/askfather. Comments, questions, suggestions, objections. We read everything that you send us. We're in this good work together. Be back in just 2 minutes. Please do stay with us. This is Jesuit Father Robert McTague, your daily host of The Catholic Current. Join me on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern to welcome back cultural critic Bill Whittle of Right Angle. Guess who's found a way to raise kids right? And the answer might surprise you. Join us on The Catholic Current on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern, coming to you from the Station of the Cross and the iCatholic Radio mobile app.
Have a question or feedback about today's episode? Want to suggest a guest or a future topic? Go to thestationofthecross.com/askfather and help influence the conversation.
Praise be Jesus Christ. This is Father Robert McTague of the Society of Jesus, your daily host for the Catholic Current, where we bring Christ to the world and the world to Christ. You're listening to us from the Station of the Cross Studios, your local radio station, the iCatholic Radio mobile app, where we proclaim the fullness of truth with clarity and charity. Here it is, the last 10 minutes of a timely Tuesday, you and me sharing timely thoughts, reflecting on what we've heard today. I was speaking with author Sarah Kane, known as the Crusader Gal, about what's going on politically and culturally, and not liking a whole lot of it. You know, we just had an election here in the United States, and some people have very high hopes and some people have very low dreads. What's my take on it as someone who's not partisan, who never tires of quoting the scriptures that says, put not your trust in princes? Whatever happens, whether anyone's worst fears or highest hopes are realized, I still want to leave you with two quotes. One was from the Hungarian author Franz Kafka, who makes me sound like Mr. Rogers by comparison. He said this: every revolution evaporates and leaves behind the slime of a new bureaucracy. maybe this time will be different. I don't know. This time hasn't really started happening just yet. But I also want to add an observation from the great Cardinal Pie, French cardinal, a favorite of Leo XIII. And he was writing, I think it's in the mid-19th century. Listen to this. He says, when the Christianity of a country is reduced to the bare proportions of the domestic life, when Christianity is no longer the soul of public life, of public power, of public institutions, then Jesus Christ deals with this country in the manner he is there dealt with. He continues to give his grace and his blessings to the individuals who serve him, but he abandons the institutions, the powers which do not serve him. And the institutions, the kings, the nations become like shifting sand in the desert. They fall away like the autumn leaves which are gone with the wind. So says Cardinal Pie, writing a very long time ago. Well, what are we to make of all this? Well, first of all, let's calm down. Let's calm down. And let's really lean on Catholic teaching. What is the common good? Now, some people think the common good means the government collects other people's wealth at gunpoint and distributes it to people whom they like. And if you're smart, you'll become an NGO or some charitable institution and offer to help to redistribute that wealth once you get your cut for administrative costs. And that's not what the common good is. The common good is facilitating communal life such that it is easier for people to live and die as saints. Because that is the purpose of human life, and that is God's will. And, you know, honestly, God's will gets a bad rap these days. You know, at the end of our days, we're going to stand before God and either say, my will be done or thy will be done. And God will simply say, yes. Think about that for a moment. We decide whether or not we choose or reject God. And yes, God's will can be hard. Let me tell you a true story. I was offering Mass at a monastery once, and it was a good monastery. The sacristy was clean. You could perform surgery in any flat surface. The sanctuary was so clean, it could have been a NASA clean room. They could have curated moon rocks on it. It was so clean. So I was very, very surprised when I was leaving Mass that I saw a dead bug in the sanctuary. I mean, a really big dead bug. So after Mass, I mentioned this to Sister Sacristan. There was this big honking dead bug in the sanctuary. And she turned pale and she began to shake. And she said, oh, Father, that bug, is it a spider? And I said, gosh, sister, I don't know, but I'll go get it. Don't you worry. And she said, no, Father, no. I didn't come to the monastery to do my will. And she trudged off to the sanctuary to confront the dead bug as if she were the condemned going to the gallows. Now, God bless her self-abnegation, but let's remember that God's will is related to God's kingdom. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So heaven is the place where God's will is perfectly realized eternally, and we are meant to replicate that here on earth. Now, that has all sorts of liturgical implications, which is another topic for another time. But God's will is supposed to be the pearl of great price, the treasure that we forsake everything for. And we end up treating God's will as some kind of horrible buzzkill. Well, I can have a wonderful, happy life, or I can do God's will. As if the choice were between, you know, would you like the key of the executive washroom? Would you like this moist towelette? No. That is wrong. God can only will what is best for us, and what is best for us is himself. Now, it is true, sometimes doing God's will is hard. I'll just speak for myself. You know when I found God's will to be hard? When I loved my will more. When I wanted things that weren't good for me. When I wanted things in a way that God had not provided for. When I lacked the freedom and the good sense to trust God's love, that's when God's will was hardest for me. Well, what has this got to do with politics, Father? Well, in a certain sense, really everything. What do we most want out of life? What do we most want out of life? Now, regular listeners to the show say, here's where Father's going to quote St. Ignatius Loyola, the first principle and foundation. Man is created for the praise, reverence, and service of God, and thereby to save his soul. In which case, it doesn't matter long life, short life, wealth, poverty, sickness, health. What matters is attaining the end for which we were made. I would like to have our communal life at every level oriented towards helping you and me and everybody else to live and die as saints. I don't see that happening anytime soon. Maybe time will prove me wrong, and I would be happy to admit that I am wrong about this, but I don't think I am. So meanwhile, we have to form small intentional communities of friends and families and neighbors and parishioners, communities who are committed to performing the corporal and the spiritual works of mercy, caring for body and soul, keeping each other safe, not only physically, but above all, morally. And the church has seen nations and kingdoms and empires and tyrants come and go and come and go and come and go. And at all times, always, always, Christ reigns, and he calls us for our good to become saints. Think of these things today. Take it to prayer. Talk about it with those you love. I'm Jesuit Father Robert McTague, your host here every day of the Catholic Current. You want to join us tomorrow? I'm going to welcome back someone I admire very greatly, cultural commentator Bill Whittle. The topic will be, guess who's raising kids right? I think the answer will surprise you. After the broadcast today, go to thestationofthecross.com, get our resources list, download our audio as podcast. Wherever you can find audio, you can find us. Follow us on your favorite platform, write a 5-star review. We need to attract the attention of the listeners so that these conversations get the attention they deserve. Take us to your family and friends. Together we'll take it to the whole world. Through the intercession of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, may Mighty God bless you, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Go in peace, and please do pray for me.
Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by thestationofthecross.com, a listener-funded nonprofit organization. Please prayerfully consider donating at thestationofthecross.com by calling 1-877-888-6279 or through our free iCatholic Radio mobile app.
88% of the workweek is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.